International Men's Day on BFBS.
45 minutes before I went on air, I found out that a really good friend had passed away. You're then going on to do an hour where everybody is listening, and that was... It was one of the most difficult shows that I did.
I had no media qualifications, no A-levels. I hadn't gone to university like a lot of people had. Every step I've gone through in radio, I have had imposter syndrome. And I do find that really weird, and it's something that's quite difficult to kind of manage.
I don't know if you feel this, but like, I feel like if I have to have a day off because my boy's got an appointment to do with his ADHD or something, I feel like I maybe ask for a day off too many, or if I need to go and be there for him and be there for my family, I feel guilty that I'm leaving work in the stress.
So we're talking role models. You've helped me realise one there.
Yeah, and I worked with this guy and he was an absolute inspiration to work with. You saw how it didn't need to be complicated. It could be easy. And actually, radio-wise, I would say he was the person who kind of inspired me that actually I can do this.
I'm joined by Professor Neil Greenberg. Neil, it's fantastic to have you. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background, first of all?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an ex-military person. I'm a psychiatrist. I served in the Royal Navy for about 23 years. I left in 2013. I was a general doctor in the Navy, but then also specialised in psychiatry. And my particular thing that I was interested in particular was the academic side of psychiatry. So I ended up sort of leading the military mental health research program and seeing lots of military patients. And I now are very much interested in what's called occupational mental health. So I do work at King's College London. I run a small company. I see some patients and generally pretty busy.
You've got a fantastic... I'm looking back at your career, believe it or not, and you've had a fantastic, fantastic career, something that anybody could be incredibly proud of. Talk to us about your military service.
So I joined the military when I was a medical student. I was at Samson University, and actually I was listening to the radio in my second year around Christmas time, and at that time there's no one in my family who's in the military. I had no idea the military even had doctors. I mean, I just wouldn't know that. And there was the doctor on the QE2, on the big cruise liner there, who was talking about their life. And I have to say, it sounded pretty good on a cruise liner. And then they said they'd been in the Navy. And I thought, gosh, I didn't know the Navy had doctors. But I knew one of my mates back at university, his brother was in the Navy. So I went back after the Christmas holidays and I said, you know, do you ever know the Navy had doctors, Chris? And Chris said, oh, I'm going up to London to see someone about this. And I went, can I come? And that was kind of, you know, led me in one step after another to joining up. I had a great time. I spent a year on a ship and went around the world as the medical officer in HMS Monmouth. I then had 7 months in HMS Spartan, which was a hunter-killer nuclear submarine, and we went away and did lots of stuff and, you know, got a bit smelly at times underwater for a couple of months in a row. And then I ended up my general duties doctor time with the Royal Marines, and I, you know, went to some great places. I went and did my commando course, which was, you know, pretty tough, as you'd expect, but quite satisfying. And then I kind of specialised in psychiatry, and I've been really lucky in terms of getting some great experiences. I went and helped the Foreign Office after 9/11. I went out to New York. I went to Bali after the Bali bombings. And I managed to sort of develop a real good portfolio of I think, trying to help people who have been exposed to trauma. And since I've left the military, I've carried on doing that, you know, now working with, say, healthcare workers, you know, who do amazing work, and also emergency services and lots of other groups of people. So I think my time in the military, it was both really enjoyable and satisfying, but I also think it left me with a real good understanding about how teams and how organizations work. And this is pretty cheesy, but I think one of the things that I think the military does really well is it's recognized that actually resilience doesn't lie in individuals, it lies in the bonds between them. And what the military, I think, is really good at, and the rest of the world could do with learning it, is actually we shouldn't think about whether Bob, Chris or Sandra is resilient as an individual. We should think about whether the teams that people work in are resilient. Because as you know, the military sends people to horrible places, but they send teams of people who work together closely, and they know they can rely on each other. They've got each other's back. And I think the more that we can help the rest of the world see that actually create a good team and you'll get a really good output, I think the better the future will be.
I think that's a perfect moniker for men's mental health and anything that we'd be looking at, not just this week, but across the entire month of November. And mental health isn't just for a month, a week, a day. It is forever. And I think that's quite a good way to look at it, and how not just men, but anyone can approach mental health and just making sure their mind is staying healthy, right?
Absolutely. And of course, you know, mental health, like physical health, you know, you can have physical health problems, you can have good physical health, you can have good mental health, and you can have mental health problems. And it's worth recognising that mental health problems are pretty common. You know, at any time, you know, one in six of us, you know, just less than 20%, are going to have a mental health problem. It doesn't mean you're weak. It doesn't mean you're strange. It's what happens. The same as, like, you know, we have dodgy ankles at times, or we hurt our backs. These things happen. But if you seek the right sort of support for your ankle or your back, you know, guess what? It gets better. And if you do the right sort of things to look after your mental health and to speak to your mates and to, you know, if you need it, go and speak to your GP and get some professional help, then things get better. The real unfortunate thing is just to suffer and let life drag on and to have a crap time, because when there's help out there, and they say not all the help needs to be from doctors, you know, friends and family, people you trust are also good. It just makes so much sense to go and get some support. There's plenty around if you ask for it.
Now, the prof's going to stick with us, and I am going to move over to chatting with Tom, Dom and Mark. We're going to be given a set of envelopes that each have cards with statements, questions and things on them that I'm going to read out to the lads. And it'll just provoke a bit of a conversation between us blokes and how we're feeling and how we're doing. The prof will chime in after each section and just give us his idea on what that means for men's mental health and a bit of advice as to how we can look after ourselves. Is it hard to put on a brave face while at work? Gents, what are we saying? Like, go on, Tom.
I think it depends on your work culture a lot. So here at BFBS, it doesn't. A lot of the time, I feel, for myself, this is going to change, I expect, for everyone. But personally, for myself here, you know, like, it isn't hard to talk to our colleagues and stuff like that. But maybe at other workplaces in the past where I've been as a man, when I was working in construction, that was quite a difficult thing. And you would just have to put a brave face on because you're working amongst lots of other very manly men, basically, for me when I was in construction. But I mean, that was difficult. But here at BFBS, that isn't really something that I've had to struggle with so much.
No, I was going to say, I think one of the great things about radio is it's an escape for me. So whatever I've been going through over the years, whether it be a divorce or sort of any kind of sort of problems with the family, it's always been a great place to come. You come into these little studios and you can just escape from the world. You can, you know, talk to people who don't know about what's going on. The 3-4 hours that I spend in the studio are, you know, they are the brave face. That is my escape. So work has always been my happy place, so to speak.
It is a couple of levels, isn't it? So a lot of people think that when you're on your radio, that's all you do. You turn up, you open the microphone, you go away again, and that's it. So we have that environment in the office, which is a safe space. The escape for me is that sports show on a Saturday, for example, where there's so much going on, you don't have time to think about things that are going on in your own life. But very, very recently, in fact, it was the BFBS Big Salute Day, 45 minutes before I went on air, and I found out that a really good friend passed away. You're then going on to do an hour where everybody is listening, and it was one of the most difficult shows that I did, but I kept hearing her voice in the back of my head saying, come on, Mark, you can do this, you can do this. And that one, that whole show was for Sam. You know, they always talk about the show must go on when you're performing. And that's effectively what we do in this industry, in this job, is that we are performers, but we're also human beings as well.
And we're other people's escapes as well.
And it was told to me in my radio career that when you go into the studio, leave your at the door. But do you know what? I struggle with that. I find that I'm a very emotional person about everything. And it doesn't always come across, but let's say in every aspect of life, in like as a footballer, I was terrible because if somebody hit me with a tackle, I'm hitting you back twice as hard. I couldn't regulate aggression, that competitiveness. And I find that creeps into my work, that if I've had a naff day, you'll hear it on the radio. I genuinely feel like that. If you know me well enough, you'll hear it.
When I first got into radio, some of my favourite presenters were talking about how they were feeling. You know, they'd start their breakfast show and, it, you know, it'd be a well-renowned national breakfast show, and they'd start it off with saying, oh, I'm sick of COVID-19, I'm sick of being indoors, I'm fed up of it. And although that's quite a negative place to start a show on, it did make me feel more relaxed because I was also sick of the same things that they were sick of.
Now we're able to talk so much more openly about life and our challenges and how we feel.
Professor Neil Greenberg, the lads really doing their best to share and be honest. We've talked about putting on a brave face. This is something that men probably do this quite often, just sucking it up and moving on. Is there something that people really should be looking out for there when it comes to their mental health and just sucking it up?
Well, you're quite right. Men are much less likely to seek professional help for their mental health compared to women. I think the thing that's important in speaking to other people is to have people around you who you trust, because it's not easy to open up sometimes about your most personal and sensitive information. And one thing the military does really help you do is to form some bonds, some friendships of people who you know have really got your back. And actually, if they've got your back in a physical sense, then if it's the right person, that they should also have your back in a psychological sense. And sometimes, you know, you end up believing that, you know, it's only you who've got a problem, or you're worried about something and think that no one else will understand. You open up to someone who you trust, and actually you find that they've got exactly the same views on that as you have. And that's really, really helpful, because it kind of think, gosh, you know, I'm not alone.
This one is a statement. It says, I do / don't fit in where I am.
Okay. How can we just clarify the word slash? You do slash. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't part of your statement.
And I think that is a showcase that we all, at least in some way or another, fit in. Because military humour is like that. It's dark. And a blokey humour as well is like that. And for every scenario where you think, do you know what? I'm not like these lads to my left and right. They're in the gym every day, that are out doing things that are potentially making a difference to our country. But we all do make wee jokes, and that's important.
It just goes back to that escape thing. You know, we can be their escape by showing them that there's life outside the gym. And if we're talking about not fitting in, that's a place I don't fit in. I'm sorry, that's not my happy place.
I think it's like a family, isn't it? You know, members of a family are different, and we all have places in it. And if ours is to speak, to listen, to convey stories, but equally to talk about the important things as well, then I think that's where we fit in.
Imposter syndrome for me is definitely a thing. Like, I often am sat in a studio thinking, God, I'm not good enough to do this. Like, I'm not. Like, I just sit here and I've
that says about you as well, Curtis, but I'll defend you at the end.
I never had a plan B, you know. I can't think of what I wanted to do other than radio. Yeah, I'm still sat here going, do I do this? Am I good enough to do this?
Curtis, it's so interesting you brought up imposter syndrome, because I get that all the time. And you know what? When I first wanted to get into radio, I had no media qualifications, didn't have any A levels, hadn't gone to university like a lot of people had. I just knew I wanted to do it, and every step I've gone through in radio, you know, whether it was starting at hospital radio, small commercial radio, whether it was when I started at BFBS, I have had imposter syndrome, and I do find that really weird, and it's something that's quite difficult to kind of manage.
I think that's why we hide in studios. When you're away, when you're serving abroad, and I did a bit of time in Gibraltar over the summer recently, and that whole officer's mess dining scenario was something before I started was like, I really didn't like. That was the thing I was least looking forward to. And actually, after about a week or so, everything became so much more natural. You found the characters around the table, you were all having banter, and you were accepted. And I think the one thing about being in the radio, on the radio, is actually people are interested in your job. So actually, you shouldn't have imposter syndrome, because actually they want to find out what you do. And it's kind of cool.
Dom, you're right. And I think it's not just in the mess. I think in the military community, if you're living in SFA, if you're in the mess, whatever, the military community is great. And everybody has different experiences of their time in service or working alongside our armed forces. But you know what? Like, in the time that I've spent with BFBS and the armed forces, it's been so inclusive. Like, I've always felt like if there's something going on, somebody goes, yeah, okay, are you coming along to this? And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, you are now. Let's go. The community, and especially overseas, is really tight-knit. Professor Neil Greenberg, we've talked about fitting in, and something that came up there, Neil, was imposter syndrome. What's that like, and how does that affect your mental health, and how can you maybe just get over it a little bit?
Imposter syndrome is incredibly common. If you ask most people, apart from those who are either incredibly psychopathic or incredibly arrogant, most people, when they are in a responsible role, and that can even be as a parent as well, most people feel that they're not fully equipped to do the job. And the reason that they do is they look around at other people and think that everyone else thinks that they know what they're doing and that they're fully competent and they can get on with things. In fact, if you had an honest conversation with other people, you'd probably find that they too had a bit of imposter syndrome. Rather than say, just don't worry about it, I think what we should say and what people should know is actually it's really, really common. And just because you think you're not good enough or you think you're not the right person, it doesn't mean that you're not competent or you're not good for doing the job or role you're in. And I always think when I kind of get to those positions, you know, giving a talk or you're going for an interview, well, you know what? Someone asked me to give this talk or you know what? They appointed me to this job. So, you know, if they think I'm good enough, then I'll just get on and try my best.
Your work-life balance. Discuss it.
Shocking.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. Yeah, after however many years, Mark, in this industry, I mean, is there a balance?
No, there's not.
Always thinking.
Yeah. No, you're right. And it's something that I promised myself I would try and get better. But the thing is that my work is my hobby. And this sounds like I'm speaking to my family as I justify me sitting editing something on a Sunday on my day off, you know. But it is. It's a hobby. I'm not going fishing. I'm not going for a run, as you can tell. You know, I'm not necessarily going to watch football matches or whatever. I love the diversity that BFBS has brought us, whether it's on the radio or whether it's doing the social media. Could I spend more time with my family? My home life is at points complicated because my son has severely complex special needs, additional needs, so that adds a whole bag of frogs, and that's exactly what it is. It's very difficult for me to plan anything.
There's never a blueprint, is there? Like, I feel like I'm in this great and it's self maybe a self-imposed gray area, right? As I have a young family, my boy's just been diagnosed with ADHD, and you're trying to navigate, like, I want to be the best Curtis at work, and then I want to come home and I want to be the best dad, and then I want to go out and be the best me and continue playing football. I want to be able to sit and have an hour on a PlayStation with a couple of lads that do that. And I want to be the best at everything. And sometimes it just feels like I'm in this grey area where I can't please everyone. And I really want to please everyone and I just can't do it.
I find my work-life balance is shocking. And I haven't got a family. I haven't got like a wife or a girlfriend or kids or anything like that because I'm too young to be having that. But like, I will often find, like, on a Sunday around 4 o'clock-ish, I'll open back up my work laptop. And that'll just be because I care so much about what it is that I'm doing, whether it's at work or it's my personal life or stuff like that, that I can't help but not do some stuff on that.
We're joking here about age and time. And time is something that is a recurring thing in my life. And again, it was something my dad said when he retired, which was, watch time because it's sneaky. It just goes. It's those seconds. You know, it's the wasted moments. And I think we all need to make the most of what we've got. And you need to be happy as well. And for that to happen, there has to be an element of selfishness because only you can decide, is it family? Is it having a nice car? Is it having a mullet? Any of that. It's up to you to decide and find out. And you won't do that first time. You'll make mistakes.
I find a lot of guilt weighed in as well. Like, I feel guilty to everybody. Like, if I'm chipping off from work early in a day because I've got a commitment to go and do something with my family, I feel guilty on behalf of that I'm not working hard enough. And like, guilt weighs so heavily, I think, and it's such a deep hole that you really have to look after yourself. Mark, I don't know if you feel this, but like, I feel like if I have to have a day off because my boy's got an appointment to do with his ADHD or something, I feel like I maybe ask for a day off too many, or if somebody's had a day off that week already and I should be picking up the slack. But actually, I need to go and be there for him and be there for my family. I feel guilty that I'm leaving work in the stress.
So I think we'll all agree that we work for a company that takes well-being and family very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. And I think that's...
Yeah.
And of all the people on this call, I'm probably the one that has had that most in that, you know, and people ask me all the time how my son is. And every time I say he's doing all right, he proves me wrong. And we can end up in hospital for 10 days. He sleeps with oxygen at night. We have nights where we don't sleep at all. So you come into work and you are just not functioning. I try to work out, you know, do I take leave? And often it can be a Saturday morning. I can be on Saturday sport and I'll get a phone call. Maybe he's been at respite and he's been taken into hospital. So then you go in there and you're thinking, at what point do I call in here to say that I can't do the show? But that does not, and it never will take away that guilt, because that's the type of person you are.
With the guilt that you were saying, Curtis, I mean, actually, a conversation, communication actually helps with that. Because actually, if you are worried about all this stuff and you're holding it all up and you're thinking, oh, I've got to do this, actually sit down and have a conversation with the person involved. Because actually, 9 times out of 10, they completely understand. And although they won't take the guilt away, what they will do is they will then be aware that you are feeling that, and actually sort of that it won't be so bad all over. You know what I mean? It kind of smooths the edges a little bit.
I'm really interested in looking after my muckers here. When it comes to work-life balance and how that affects our mental health, how important is it to have a good work-life balance?
So I think, like many things in mental health, there's a huge amount of variability. For some people, their work is everything, and actually they don't want to spend too much time, you know, doing niff-naff and trivia and socialising and doing household chores. But I think the key thing is that for each of us individually, what we need to do is to find our own balance rather than to stick to some sort of general idea of what's good or bad. What I have to say I see quite a lot in military and ex-military people is, because they're, you know, decent, highly responsible people who are highly professional, is they often see their work as being more important to them than perhaps other people might do. What's important is that we sort of recognise that, you know, work can be important, but that actually, and I always use this kind of, sounds a rather morbid sort of analogy, is that, you know, when you want to work out what you want written on your gravestone, you know, worked every day of their lives is probably not what you want written there. But I do think it's worth thinking about, who am I, what do I want out of my life, and what role does work play in that?
It's a quote, and the quote is from Mother Teresa, and it says, "Loneliness, or the feeling of being unwanted, is the most terrible poverty." And I think that thought of feeling by yourself and feeling lonely, that we've all done that at some point. But Tom, you've just said it there. Like, what was that, man? What was that like?
It was weird. I'd just come out of school and I'd gone into construction. So I've just finished my A-levels. And all my friends at this point had gone to university, and I hadn't. I'd started working in construction. So, you know, I was on social media and I was seeing their lives unravel. They were going out on a Tuesday night till 6 a.m. having a great time. And then at 6 a.m. on a Tuesday, though, I'd wake up exhausted and I'd be going to work. And I just felt so far apart from my generation and what my generation were doing. I couldn't help but feel lonely in that moment, because I was doing the complete opposite to what everyone I knew my age was doing. It was a horrible feeling. But the radio was the community that sort of made me not feel lonely anymore. You know, once I found that community, I was no longer lonely.
I kind of relate to that when it comes to loneliness. And actually, I was married to my first wife. We'd had a child and it wasn't going well. And it wasn't going well because I wasn't doing what I wanted to do since I was 14, which was work on the radio. And we ended up splitting up. But the first thing I did when the divorce came through was use the last bit of my credit card to pay for a radio course. And I started working in radio 2 months later. So, you know, you in that loneliness, in that despair, in that bad place, that dark place, you somehow can find direction. And actually you find that community, and that community can help you move forward and help lift you up.
I don't want to say the word stigma, but there's always that chatter, isn't there, about as a bloke finding it hard to talk about something. I mean, Tom, did you talk about your loneliness to somebody? So like, when you were feeling lonely, could you find a way to bring it up, or did you just kind of push it and just crack on.
I did eventually, but I went through months of just sort of pushing it down and not pretending it didn't exist until I hit like a boiling point. I remember there was this one evening where I just had to sit in the living room with my mum and dad and I just had to have a meltdown because they had no idea how I was feeling. You know, I'd gone through at this point like 6 months of just feeling rubbish, and then they must have been so shocked because after this 6 months where I appeared absolutely fine, I just confessed that I was far from it. I was so far from it. And that must have been really shocking to them. But the lesson for me from that was that I should just, if I'd spoken to my parents about it, you know, after a week of feeling rubbish, I never would have got to such a bad place.
It's funny we're talking about loneliness on a call like this, where now we've got better way of keeping in touch with friends that we probably don't see on a regular basis than we ever have at any time in history with your social media. And, you know, you look down, and I don't know if you guys have done it, I've done it. I scroll down through either WhatsApp or Facebook, and I think, will I speak to them? Will I speak to them? Will I speak to them? Who is the best person to speak to about how I'm feeling at the moment? And then I probably get so exhausted that I just go, do you know what? I'll deal with it myself.
Professor, it's, again, a topic that, something that people find really difficult to breach. It's loneliness. Genuinely feeling like you've got nobody or feeling alone. That's a tough one, and that's really mentally draining, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's a great Brian Ferry, you know, Roxy Music quote, which is, you know, loneliness is a crowded room, which I think is entirely right. And being lonely doesn't necessarily follow not having lots of associates or having lots of friends. Sometimes seeing other people around you appearing to have a good time can make you feel just even more alone than actually being by yourself. And so the real thing with loneliness is it's about having people who you trust. And actually, if you share a little bit about, you know, what's going on inside of you, what's going on inside of your head, actually you're more likely to form a good connection, and that's likely to sort of decrease your feelings of loneliness. The right thing is to think about the two or three leading questions that get you there, rather than say, hi John, you know, I'm feeling lonely, can we chat, which seems like, you know, quite difficult to do. It's to ask John about how John's doing, and then try and find something in common with John, your mate, and then say, actually, I've been finding things a bit tough, and slowly lead your way in. You don't have to come out and reveal your loneliness hand too much.
Oh, well, this is a great way to end. It says, what do you do to relax?
Well, I was going to say I watch football, but not after yesterday's Liverpool-Arsenal match.
What side of that are you on?
I'm on the Liverpool side.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a bit lucky yesterday. But no, I watched my son play football. That makes me feel very at peace and happy with the world. And I did that yesterday morning, and they won 13-0, and he scored a scorcher into top bins from outside the penalty area.
Oh, I love that. Yeah,
that's what I do. That's my escape.
I think sport, whether you're competing or watching it, is always relaxing. For me, it is. Definitely. Yeah. Like Don, where you were watching the football, that was relaxed. I was watching a football game as well yesterday. It was like the most small, low-level football game you can imagine, but just watching it was relaxing and enjoyable. But also competing or just going to the gym, for me, that's just relaxing.
Have you got a sport of choice, mate? Do you play anything?
Yeah, I play a bit of football, and I go to the gym a lot. That's mostly it, really. But that is just how I'll zone it. Because if you're doing that, you're not thinking about anything else.
Monday night on the six-side AstroTurf, that was great until my knees gave way, but that was great.
Yeah, listen, if you're relaxing when you're watching football, you're supporting the wrong team. Or maybe I'm supporting the wrong team. I haven't survived.
No, you're right. That's true.
I like watching football for teams that I have no interest in, because that I find relaxing.
That's why the World Cup is so enjoyable. Yeah. When England aren't playing, especially when Scotland aren't playing. when England aren't playing, it's quite relaxing to watch the rest of it. There was a World Cup. Now, this is education for you, Tom. Back in the early 90s, the World Cup was held in the USA, and England didn't qualify. I still to this day say it was one of my most enjoyable World Cups to watch, because Ireland played amazingly, Brazil were incredible. It was just one of the most joyful World Cups to watch.
And Ross missed the penalty in that World Cup. You need to Google that one. For me, it's music. I'm not musical at all, and I can't play an instrument. I can't sing, but I love listening to music. I love going for walks and taking pictures, looking at landscapes and looking at the seascapes in particular. That's my escape. And somebody asked me recently, why do you put so many photos up? I've unfriended them as friends, but on Facebook, but there's something about, if you look at something, then you look at it and then you look away. If you take a photo, you're then doing that, you're taking the photograph, you're then looking at it again. So you know, you're processing it. So it helps with that kind of therapy. Dom, listening to you speaking about your son scoring a goal, that's the kind of thing that I absolutely dream of. And that was, for me, that was the idea of being a dad. And my journey has been really different and really difficult for, don't get me wrong, there's so many rewarding things, but things like the Gillette advert that's on, which is a father to son, it's the dad teaching his son to shave. I can't do that. I have to say, you know, I have to shave my son's face. He's 15 and he's starting to get that. But it's not, pity me and feel sorry for me. It's just, you know, we talk a lot about the negative things and how mental health can be bad for your mental health. But you have to clutch at the really good things that are there. And hopefully none of us have to look too far to find something positive that's going on that we can can hold that. Because we can speak to anybody. And, you know, I'm a great believer that everybody has a story. And you don't have to dig too far down to find a really sad bit. Even in some of the most successful people in the world, they go through really tough times. That's what makes you.
I love that. I literally, sitting here and listening to all of y'all, I could put a mirror up to any of those for things for me. Talking about sport, Tom, I haven't played football a lot this year, but I've played a lot of golf, and that frustrates the hell out of me. I'm rubbish at golf, like really rubbish. Just being on the golf course is relaxing. Playing football, watching football is a happy place. Spending time with my kids, although that is absolutely not a relaxing situation, Dom. I'm not sitting and watching them play football. I'm running around with them dressed up like a dinosaur or something. And it's not relaxing, but it kind of is in a way. And like what you've said, Mark, just talking to people, and I suppose we have to say drink responsibly, but at the end of the week, on a Friday, cracking open that first beer and sitting down, whether it's just to chat with my missus or if it's chatting to mates, that is relaxing. That is. And you hear that or whatever it is that you've done and you just kind of go, oh, everything yous have said, I feel that. That's a bit of a kind of slopey shoulders cop-out thing to say, copying what all of yous have said. But it's true, isn't it? And I think just being able to do that and sit and have a chat about football, about playing something, doing something with family, with whatever, just sitting and having a drink, even if it's a cup of tea. You can go and have a cup of tea. Within the military, the amount of coffee mornings there are, to just go and have a cup of coffee and just sit and have a chat with somebody, that is relaxing. And actually, I have watched time fly as we've chatted today, thinking, I've done no work today. This has been great. Do you know what, honestly? Talking to you and assembling us here together to talk about being blokes, how we feel, learning about stuff, listening to the banter of being age different, listening to Dom in a heartbeat figure out he's got a role model, finding things that you've got in common, you know, relating that guilt and how you feel about looking after family members, Marco. I mean, hearing things from all of you and Tom, you're getting into radio and feeling like you don't belong. You worked on a construction site before and I feel everything that you boys have felt. And I think today has been so important for me, knowing that I'm not by myself. I'm not lonely in how I feel, nor where I am, because we've got the opportunity to talk like this. Prof, great to have you back again. We've been talking today about relaxing and how important that is for your mental health. This is so key, and it seems fairly obvious, doesn't it, that to have a healthy body and a healthy brain, you need to have some downtime.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, what's really important, again, is that people find things that allow them to sort of switch off but still gain pleasure. You know, so many people, but you know, particularly many military people, often find that, for instance, exercise is good for them. But if you happen to like listening to music or, you know, going to art shows or watching your favourite football team It doesn't matter what it is. It just matters that you can gain some sort of pleasure and that you don't allow work to kind of take over your life. I think another thing that relaxing often does is to help you socialize with other people. Many of us relax with others. And what we know is there's a real positive effect to social support. So being able to sort of speak to your mates about what's going on in your life, or, you know, or even, you know, watch the sporting match together, that's really important. So yes, we all do need an element of relaxing. You know, how much varies on who you are, really, though.
It's been an absolute privilege for me to be a part of this and to chat with Tom, Dom and Mark, and just find out a little bit more about them, what's going on with them, and talk about our mental health as blokes. Now, it's important to say that not all of this is out of nowhere. There's been a study that says that 77% of men suffer with symptoms of common mental health conditions like anxiety, stress, depression. 40% of men say that they don't really speak about their mental health. And rate of male suicide is incredibly high in the UK alone. 3 out of 4 suicides in the UK are by men. It's really, really important that we just look after our mental health and do what we can to help somebody out or to look after ourselves as well. It's worth noting that at BFBS, we've got our audience support section on our website that you can go to, bfbs.com/audience-support. And there's a number of signposted locations there that you can go to seek some help. If you're serving personnel, then help is out there for you. Your first point of call should be your chain of command, the unit medical officer, the welfare officer, or a chaplain. Whether you're in the UK or overseas, if you seek out any of these, they're there to help you, give you the best advice, and you can find through your chain of command some contact numbers for them. Or if you're in the UK and you find it easier to call the NHS, then you can just call them up on 111.